It's 10:15. I'm calling this meeting of the Tax Committee to order for Thursday, March 12th. The first item on the agenda is to approve the minutes from March 11th. Representative Elkins, will you move the minutes from March 11th?
I do.
All right. Representative Elkins has moved the minutes from March 11th. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, no. Motion carries. The minutes for March 11th are adopted. First up on the agenda today, we have House File 4119. Representative Ray Rauer, welcome to the committee. Thank you so much for being here. Chair moves that House File 4119 be laid over for possible inclusion in the 2026 tax bill. Representative Ray Rauer, I understand you have an A1 amendment. Would you like me to move that amendment?
Yes.
Excellent. Chair moves the A1 amendment. Is there any discussion on the A1? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed, no. Motion carries. The bill is in the form the author would like. Representative Ray Rauer, please explain your bill.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair. My bill, HF 4119, increases the homestead credit and the renter's credit in order to provide property tax relief to homeowners and renters. Specifically, the relief will go to those who need it most. With the homestead credit, if your property taxes exceed a certain percentage or threshold percentage of your income, the state gives you a refund. With this bill, we are increasing the amount of that refund. And this helps those whose property taxes are high related to their incomes. With the renter's credit, it is assumed that 17% of the rent goes towards property tax. Depending on one's income, there is a fixed percentage that the state would require the renter to pay. With this bill, we are decreasing the percentage the state is requiring of the renter to pay. Unlike the state, local governments only have one tool to raise general fund revenue, and that's property tax. As a former Coon Rapids City Council member, I know that local governments provide a lot of essential services, from our schools to our roads, water and sewer. Specifically in Coon Rapids, our property tax rates went up when I was a council member 7% a couple years in a row because we had to pay our police and fire more due to inflation. We had to provide them with decent contracts. So that income is needed for local governments. And we as legislators can't control local property tax increases, but we can play a role in making sure that whether you're a homeowner or a renter, that you get the help if you need it. And this keeps the low-income folks from being overburdened by taxes. That's why I brought forward this bill, to increase the homestead credit refund and the renter's credit. Together, these will reach over 800,000 Minnesotans. These programs have been around in some form for over 40 years and are an essential part of how the state helps Minnesotans deal with higher property taxes. We can deliver relief in this way without dismantling our tax base or shifting the cost onto others. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you so much, Representative Ray Rauer. We're bummed you don't serve on the Tax Committee, but it's as though you've been listening in to our hearings lately because you really surfaced so many of the issues that we've been discussing here in terms of the cost drivers to local governments, and we appreciate your personal experience on that. Kind of how, because we restrict their ways of raising money, how we just put the pressures onto the property tax base and our tools for addressing that. So thank you so much. We have a couple of testifiers on House File 4119 who have signed up in advance. First is Michael Dahl and Nan Madden, you're on deck. Mr. Dahl, good to see you again. Please introduce yourself for the record as you start your testimony.
Good morning, Chair Gomez and members of the committee. My name is Michael Dahl, and I'm the Public Policy Director at Homeline, a statewide tenant advocacy organization. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of House File 4119, and thank you to Representative Ray Rauer for championing this legislation. To provide some context for my remarks, Homeline's primary program is our statewide tenant hotline, where we offer free and confidential legal advice to renters across the state. We are not an financial assistance provider, and we do not have funds to distribute to clients. As a result, requests for financial assistance have historically not been among the most common reasons that tenants contact us. However, that began to change last year and has continued into 2026. In 2025, calls related to financial assistance increased by 63% compared to 2024. This trend has accelerated this year. In January and February of 2026, compared to the same months in 2025, we saw an 84% increase in these requests. In fact, financial assistance calls have moved from their typical position of around 7 on, as most common reason called, to the third. This is not something we have never had in our history. As I noted in testimony earlier this week, and these numbers demonstrate, renters are struggling. Many callers are not only asking us to help pay rent, they are calling us about raising other concerns about basic expenses, childcare, gas, utilities, medical costs, medications, food, and essential household items. Renters in Minnesota need relief, and House File 4119 offers one meaningful way to provide it. Homeline urges the committee to give this proposal serious consideration. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dahl. Up next is Nan Madden. Welcome back to the committee. Please just introduce yourself as you start your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Nan Madden. I'm director of the Minnesota Budget Project. Our mission is to identify and advance public policies to make Minnesota a place where everyone can thrive. And I appreciate the opportunity to testify today on House File 4119. Thank you, Representative Rehrauer, for bringing this bill forward. I'll speak specifically to the renter's credit portion of the bill, which, as you heard, would provide a larger renter's credit amount for most renters who currently qualify, while maintaining existing income limits and maximum credit amounts. Minnesota renters want safe, affordable homes for themselves and their families, but some folks earning lower wages or on fixed incomes do struggle to afford the cost of housing and other basic necessities. The renter's credit refunds a portion of the property taxes that qualifying renters have paid through their rents. And on Tuesday's hearing, you received a handout about the importance of the renter's credit to people in every Minnesota county. In 2023, more than 310,000 Minnesota households received the renter's credit. They're found all across the state. In that year, 30% of households who received the renter's credit included seniors or people living with disabilities. And in 22 counties in greater Minnesota, at least half of the households who received the renter's credit included seniors or people with disabilities. I appreciate that this committee is considering various policy strategies to address the financial pressures that Minnesotans are facing, as well as strategies to respond to the pressures that cities, counties, and school districts are facing as they seek to deliver essential public services in the face of the harmful impact of federal policies. The renter's credit is the only policy tool that directly reduces the property tax's financial impact on renters while protecting the public services that they count on. Minnesota renters are an important part of their local communities, and they benefit from public services such as roads and transit, schools, public safety, and the economic opportunities that exist when we have vibrant and safe communities. We need to sustainably fund those services without asking those who are struggling to pay the bills to pay too large of a share. An expansion of the renter's credit, such as described in this bill, would provide a financial boost to the Minnesotans who receive it, as well as their local communities, as renters spend their refunds on rent, groceries, or other basics. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Madden. Is there anyone else present who wishes to testify on House File 4119? Seeing none, we'll move to member discussion. Representative Joaquin.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Rehrauer, for bringing this forward. It's always important for us to look at these brackets every year and try to readjust them as the cost of living goes up. And I know there's three different levers, and doing the co-pays always is a good one to hit. So thank you.
Thank you, Chair Joaquin. Is there any further member discussion? Not seeing any. Back to you, Representative Rehrauer, for any closing comments for us.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair. And I will note that I have asked to be on the Tax Committee.
We'll get you in here.
So thank you for hearing this bill today. I hope we can get together and give some relief to our Minnesotans. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much, Representative Rehrauer. And with that, I will renew my motion that House File 4119 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion in the 2026 tax bill. All right. We're going to do a little small shuffle on the agenda. We're going to move to Chair Youakim's House File 3792. And as the chair approaches, she's going to move that House File 3792 be laid over for possible inclusion in the 2026 tax bill. Chair Youakim, welcome to your committee. Please go ahead and, there's no amendments, go ahead and describe your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for having House File 3792 before us today. That would exempt AmeriCorps members' living allowances from state income taxes. Each year, nearly 2,000 people serve in AmeriCorps programs across our state. AmeriCorps members tutor students in math and reading, work with people who are in long-term recovery from substance abuse disorder, help families who are homeless or on the cusp of homelessness, and help with disaster recovery efforts. AmeriCorps members are young people, mild mid-career professionals looking at moving into different fields, and recent retirees looking to give back to their communities. When a Minnesotan serves in a national service program, such as Minnesota Reading Corps, Conservation Corps, Habitat for Humanity, they receive a modest living allowance. They also receive a post-service education award they may apply to their student loans or to continue their education. Minnesota does not tax the post-service education award, and House File 3792 would extend that exemption to AmeriCorps members' living allowances. The state of Minnesota already recognizes that AmeriCorps living allowances is not the same as earned income. If an AmeriCorps member applies for one of our economic assistance programs like child care assistance, housing assistance, energy assistance, or any number of the other programs, that state does not include their living allowance in the calculation of that income. It is important to understand the people who are stepping up to serve the roles they play in our communities. You will hear about the 2,000 people who serve in AmeriCorps programs from our Chief Executive Officer Julia Quandrud and Milani McCutchinson, Executive Director of Conservation Corps, doing some really good work up in Bemidji right now. Members, there's a fiscal note in your packet. There is some discussion around the assumptions in the fiscal note, and meetings are still occurring. And that discussion will continue to happen as the bill is being laid over. So with that, members, I have two testifiers with me here today, and I'll let Madam Chair call on them to introduce themselves.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Chair Youakim. So we have two testifiers. First up, Julia Quandrud, please go ahead and introduce yourself as you get started with your testimony.
Chair Gomez, committee members, my name is Julia Quandrud, and I lead Serve Minnesota. Serve Minnesota is the state's commission on AmeriCorps and public service. We are statutorily created with a board appointed by the governor. Four state legislators representing both parties serve as ex officio members of our board. Serve Minnesota administers the state federal AmeriCorps program, which hosts over 2,000 people serving as AmeriCorps members in nearly every county of the state. The majority serve in schools across the state. They are serving as reading and math tutors. They are making sure that our children are showing up for school every day. They're helping complete the FAFSA, and they're preparing students for their postgraduate plans. We have several other AmeriCorps members who are helping people who are experiencing homelessness or are recovering from substance use disorder. And we have many AmeriCorps programs who are supporting state conservation efforts and disaster response efforts. The Conservation Corps, for example, has deployed AmeriCorps members to support disaster response in northeastern Minnesota with the Camp House fire. And most recently, they have deployed to support Bemidji with cleaning up for the derecho that struck this summer. I would like to thank Representative Youakim for authoring House File 3792. This bill would exempt the living stipends AmeriCorps members receive from state income tax. We lean on AmeriCorps members to help us with some of our greatest challenges as a state. And in return, they receive a modest living stipend, generally the equivalent of about $15 an hour. House File 3792 would put a few more dollars in their pockets. And this would be especially meaningful for the AmeriCorps members who are retirees, as well as the many AmeriCorps members who are using their term in AmeriCorps to develop new skills and gain credentials to enter the workforce. For many of those Minnesotans, it would be especially meaningful to decrease their tax liability as they're preparing to take that next step. As Representative Youakim mentioned, the education award that AmeriCorps issues is already exempt from state income tax. That is a federally administered award, and it is used to repay student loans or pursue additional education. And while it is taxed at the federal level, Minnesota led the country in exempting it from state income tax. House File 3792 would simply include living stipends under that same exemption. We appreciate working with the Department of Revenue on this policy. As Representative Joaquin mentioned, we are in discussions with the department. The projections were based on a time when our funding had significant increases due to COVID-19 federal relief. And now that we're back to pre-pandemic levels of funding, we're looking forward to updating or understanding how those impacts growth assumptions on the revenue estimate. If adopted, this bill would honor the service of thousands of Minnesotans who serve in the Marine Corps each year. Not only would it serve as a powerful recruitment tool to encourage more people to serve, it would strengthen the state's service-to-career pipeline, bolstering our efforts to help AmeriCorps members translate their service into a meaningful career in Minnesota. Thank you for hearing the bill, and I look forward to answering any questions you have.
Thank you so much, Ms. Quanrud, for joining us. Up next, Nalani McCutcheon. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself as you get started. Excuse me.
Madam Chair, committee members, I'm Nalani McCutcheon, and I'm the Executive Director of Conservation Corps Minnesota and Iowa. We are a conservation-focused workforce development program that works with AmeriCorps members to provide them skills and training that they apply to the benefit of public lands. In 2024, our Corps members improved over 27,000 acres of land, and they maintained nearly 400 miles of trails. Their work benefits all Minnesotans. And Conservation Corps is just one of 50 AmeriCorps programs that are currently serving our state. Our lives and communities are richer because of their service. Our members gain workforce and leadership skills that enable them to secure long-term employment. While serving their communities, AmeriCorps members earn a modest living stipend and an end-of-service education award. I can personally confirm that AmeriCorps members would appreciate an extra few dollars that this bill would put in their pockets. My spouse served as a Reading Corps tutor in 2017, and I know firsthand that this legislation would have made her service more manageable for our family. One of our members, Zach, came to CCMI as a combat veteran struggling with post-traumatic stress disorder after discharge. He found that his intended long-term career as a science teacher only made his PTSD worse. He joined CCMI as a crew leader, and he gained practical hands-on working experience in the natural resources field that helped him identify his path for changing his career. During that time, however, he had to live in a friend's basement because he couldn't afford rent, and if he got a second job, he would be over the personal exemption limit. I also want to share an example from Recovery Corps, one of the of our colleagues in the field. Recovery Corps trains AmeriCorps members with lived experience in recovery from substance use disorder. One of their members, Michelle, served in Minneapolis and gained invaluable workforce experience towards her goal to become a full-time certified peer recovery specialist. Michelle worked a second job, and the combination of that salary and her living stipend put her over the personal exemption limit. This bill would give folks like Zach and Michelle modest tax relief while supporting their long-term career goals. Zach is currently pursuing graduate school, and Michelle is working as a certified peer at a local nonprofit. We strongly support House File 3792 because reducing the financial burden of our members will lead to greater success transitioning to the workforce, along with reduced economic stress, which can only have greater community impact. It also recognizes the debt of gratitude that we owe to these AmeriCorps members. Thank you for this opportunity to testify, and thank you for your support for AmeriCorps.
Thank you so much for joining our committee. Is there anyone else present who would like to testify on House File 3792? Not seeing anyone, we'll move to member discussion. Is there any member discussion? All right, back to you, Chair Joaquin, for any closing remarks.
Thank you, members, for your time and attention. AmeriCorps members are young people, mid-career professionals looking at moving into different fields, and in recent retirees looking to give back to their communities, and you heard some of those stories here today. They're in communities across our state, and House File 3792 will provide an added incentive for people considering AmeriCorps service to serve and to help put a few more dollars back in their pockets so they can afford to do that service. The bill is bipartisan, and I would ask for your support. Thank you.
Thank you so much. With that, Chair Youakim will renew her motion that House File 3792 be laid over for possible inclusion in the 2026 tax bill. The bill is laid over.
Thank you so much,
Chair Youakim, and to her testifiers. All right. Reverting, Representative Hewitt has joined us. So, Representative Hewitt, would you like to move that House File 3959 be laid over for possible inclusion in the 2026 tax bill?
Madam Chair, I would, and I'm sorry about my tardiness.
Excellent. We'll do better next time, Representative Hewitt.
I will.
Hewitt. Okay, great.
I'm scolded by the nun again.
All right. Welcome to your committee. Please go ahead and describe 3959 to us, Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members, for hearing this. Many of you have heard of this bill before and wondered why we couldn't get it through. I don't know that question and why the answer is, but we see this in all of, we have noticed this in all of our districts. Housing prices in Minnesota continue to climb. It's not like people don't want to move here. I know in the districts I sell in as a realtor that we can't keep things on the market, and that also drives price. It's also a mixture of corporations coming in and buying up these homes that drive up prices in neighborhoods. But the sad thing is many people, as you know, don't want to move. They don't want to leave their homes. They don't want to experience this because I'm in a home, I could stay there forever. It's a rambler. And why should our seniors be moving out of homes? But they can't control where the market goes. So what this bill basically does is, I'm going to have staff explain it a little bit more in detail, but what it does is it takes a look at where the home market value is, and if it is increased 12%, then we're going to be able to work with them. But if it's okay, Madam Chair, I'd like staff to explain a little bit more so I don't miss details on this.
Of course, Representative Hewitt. Mr. Williams?
Chair Gomez and members, so under current law, the targeting or special property tax refund applies to homeowners whose property taxes increase by more than 12% year over year, and if the increase is more than $100. The refund is essentially 60% of the increase above 12%. The bill would propose to reduce that threshold from 12% to 6%. Under current law, there's also a limit on the refund of $1,000. And the bill would increase the limit on the refund to $2,500.
Thank you, Mr. Williams. Back to you, Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I believe we have at least one testifier from the Realtor Association.
Excellent. I think Mr. Egger, Paul Egger, please introduce yourself as you get started with your testimony. Welcome to the committee.
Chair Gomez, Chair Davis, members of the committee, my name is Paul Egger, and I'm Senior Vice President of Governmental Affairs for the Minnesota Realtors Association. My testimony is going to be extremely brief because Mr. Williams took about three quarters of what I was going to say, so I'll just touch on a couple of points that we wanted to bring forward to the committee. And although I didn't get up on Representative Rehrauer's bill, I did testify Tuesday on the bill on the property tax refund program, and again, offer our support for the homeownership provisions in that bill that you just heard at the beginning of your agenda. But just want to thank the committee for hearing this bill and thank Representative Hewitt for bringing the bill forward. The targeting property tax refund provides direct relief to homeowners who have large property tax increases from 1 year to the next. And because it provides direct property tax relief, it does not shift the property tax burden onto other property taxpayers, either other homesteads, other business property, or any other property owners. This bill, House File 3959, will make homeownership a bit more affordable for many Minnesotans. It does that by reducing that threshold from 12% to 6%, by increasing those maximum refunds to $2,500, and to making these changes permanent. With the 2026 certified property tax levies for all local units, all local governments increasing 6.8%, the proposed changes to the targeting property tax refund in this bill are both timely and appropriate. Thank you for the opportunity to testify and for the committee's continued attention to challenges arising from property taxes and doing what you can to help Minnesota's homeowners address those rising costs. Thank you, Chair Gomez.
Thank you for your testimony, Paul Egger. When you're overlapping with Mr. Williams, you're in good territory, so well done. Is there anybody else present who wishes to testify on House File 3557 or 3959, excuse me? Seeing none, we'll move to member discussion. Representative Lee.
Thank you, Chair. I wanted to thank Representative Hewitt for bringing this bill before us, because even without the increased property taxes that we're going to see, when I talk to people in my communities and door knock across Minnesota, a lot of people say the 12% threshold is way too high, especially our middle-income families. And so, thank you.
Thank you, Representative Lee. Representative Weiner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you for bringing this bill forward. It's obviously an issue that's hitting a lot of people's pocketbooks. And, going back a few years, long before I became a respected member of this legislative body, I was...
Don't exaggerate. Sorry, Representative.
We'll talk later. Before I really understood how the system worked, I had gone to our county many times with property tax issues, because those increases are creating an undue burden across the whole state of Minnesota. And I often went to those tax assessments, discussed it, looked at our county commissioners and said, why are you doing this? You're going to be taxing people out of their homes. And we saw this year after year after year. But little did I know that the reason that this was going on, and it took me a couple sessions to figure it out, is that the unfunded mandates coming from the state is what's driving these property taxes up. The more burden that we push down onto the counties is driving this, unfortunately. We've talked many times about the Minnesota miracle in this committee. And when you look at that graph, it went increasingly up to fund the state government. Minnesota miracle hit and it dropped. But now the income tax, sales tax made up the difference. Since that time period, the graph is increasing almost to the point where it was in the 1970s with the Minnesota miracle. So the appetite for growth of government in this state is what's driving this. So I understand the desire, and I think this is a good bill, but I don't think it goes far enough. Because until we have a bill, and I have one coming forward, that would stop the unfunded mandates, that if we're not willing to pay for this at state government, we cannot push this down to the local entities. And that would help protect our taxpayers from getting taxed out of their home. So thank you. It has good intention, and I think it looks good, but I don't think it goes far enough. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Weiner, that brings up a lot of great points. What I didn't tell you is I had a client, I've had several clients over years, but coming up from Missouri. And I said, you're retired. I got to ask you why you want to come to the cold. I said, definitely we're not Missouri with our tax system. He said, you're not. And here's why. He said, in Missouri, I can't get services for my son. Son was disabled. In Missouri, I can't get help for my wife. I can't be sure that there's a safety net. And so it's, this is the part that I think that I struggle with, because naturally, there is burdens we put down on the counties. But you also look at our book of services, and he said basically Mississippi was above us. And nobody likes to be compared to Mississippi, apparently. So it's very interesting that you say that. And I look forward to working with you on some things that we maybe have to look at to remove. But when he said that to me, it, as a legislator, I learn in the real world like most of us mm-hmm. do. And that was really interesting. So thank you for that comment, though. And I look forward to working with you on ideas.
Thank you. Chair Joachim.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Hugh, too, I would like to ask you to lean on your experience in real estate. I know what the housing values have done in my small town of Hopkins and how much they've skyrocketed. Maybe talk about what you're seeing and how that interacts with property tax increases as well. how rising market values have affect property tax increases.
Representative Hewitt.
And again, I'll touch on this very briefly. As a realtor and realtors all over the state, all of a sudden a house that was worth $200,000, my own house was worth $200,000 in 2010. I just recently got an appraisal for $450,000, and it's a simple Rosemount house. That goes everywhere. It goes in, even on the east side of St. Paul, to your area, Dr. Wiener, I was going to go there.
Whoa.
You not only moved to very respectful from honorable to doctor, but to all our areas, we're seeing this across the state, and it's because of, we hear over and over again how people are moving out of Minnesota. I wish I can experience that as a realtor, because I can't find houses for people, which sets up the demand. And so with the demand being there, in especially your area, Representative Yukiam, or all of our areas, I mean, this is not just anywhere. It's wherever, and it's because our lifestyle is there. And that's what's setting it up, and naturally the counties are going to go with that. And like my own county, the commissioners, and I love all my commissioners. I don't want to get in trouble with them. But my commissioners all have said, you know, that we have to raise taxes this year, because this year we had a little slower incline on this tax that raised the values of the homes because of the economy and stuff. But they were able to depend on that going up lots of percentages over the last years to pull that. So this year I think Dakota County is going to be in for a surprise. So
thank you, Representative Hewitt. Chair Yukiam.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Hewitt. And our little town of Hopkins, that's 2 by 2 miles and 65% rental, owner-occupied, it's hard to find. There's this house across the street from me that was remodeled on the inside, but nothing really done on the outside, on a 50 by 150-foot lot, about 1,700 square feet, and two bedrooms, two baths, and a den. And after it was remodeled, it had been sold three times over in 6 years, and now it's up to $560,000. So it's going a little crazy in the housing market right now.
Thank you, Chair Yukiam. Chair Howard.
Thank you, Representative Gomez, and thank you, Representative Hewitt, for the bill and the discussion and the continued opportunity to talk about housing and taxes. I can't help myself.
We love it.
First, just a comment to Representative Wiener's remarks about mandates on counties. I just have to mention the presentation we heard about the impacts of H.R. 1. And, you know, the big impacts in our counties are caused by President Trump and the federal government. And so we just have to be clear. Clearly, our actions here at the state level have an impact, but so too did the federal government, as we heard. And those impacts can be significant, will be significant. And then just to this broader issue about, you know, affordability and property taxes, you know, something that Representative Hewitt mentioned that struck me is just how long people are staying in their homes. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of data that says that people are staying in their homes longer than ever before. And a big reason for that is they don't have other homes to move to that fit their needs and their life. You know, the core challenge in our housing market is a massive supply-demand mismatch. And in some ways, it's pretty simple. We don't have enough homes, especially the kinds of homes that Minnesotans want that could be available at a lower price point. To Representative Yoakim's point, that's a supply-demand issue, that the home prices have escalated so much. And so I appreciate this bill, but another policy metric is, you know, unleashing freedom and liberty in the private market and making it easier for people to build the kinds of homes that Minnesotans are desperate for.
Thank you, Chair Howard. Representative Lee.
Thank you, Chair. I really think that we should, you know, hearken back to the presentation we had from the counties a couple of weeks ago, where we saw very clearly that HR 1 will make counties do twice as much work, because right now they're being asked to certify people twice as much as they currently do, and the federal government is giving them half as much money. And so when we talk about the burdens, the unfunded mandates apparently from the federal government, like, we should really be perhaps reflecting on that. And I just think this idea that these are unfunded mandates also maybe should be rebranded, because like Representative Hewitt said, right, this is SNAP, this is you know, services for kids in need. These are things that rely on government to deliver, and HR1 is devastating to our counties and our communities. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any further discussion? All right. Not seeing any. Representative Hewitt, any closing comments for us?
Thank you, Madam Chair and Chair Davis. I really appreciate you hearing this, and to lay it over is great, because I think that's where it has to go if we have to tweak it anymore. I appreciate the committee's dialogue with this, especially Professor Wieners. And
the and, illustrious professor.
I send it back to you, Madam Chair.
Wonderful. All right. Thank you, Representative Hewitt. With that, Representative Hewitt will renew his motion that House File 3959 be laid over for possible inclusion in the 2026 tax bill, and it is laid over. Next on the agenda, Chair Howard, House File 3913. As Chair Howard gets ready to get up to the podium, he will move that 3913 be laid over for possible inclusion in the 2026 tax bill. Welcome, Chair. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Gomez, members of the committee. House File 3913, I think, is a good bill to follow on the presentation we had last week from counties about, you know, the harms and dangers when our technology does not keep up with the pace we need. And our government doesn't have the tools or the muscle to function properly in a variety of ways to serve the people, including to prevent fraud. So this is an excellent follow on that work. House File 3913 would provide $5 million to the Department of Revenue to bolster their technology and ability for audits to guard against complicated financial tax fraud, with direction to focus on larger entities that have, you know, some of the more complicated tax returns and size and scope. You know, beyond the basic good governance of updating technology and all throughout our state, we have the timely reason for this bill because the federal government has really gutted the IRS's ability to audit and detect potential fraudsters. You know, the most recent budget deal in the federal government cut IRS funding by over $1 billion, reducing their inflation-adjusted funding levels to 40% below what they were a decade ago. Staff has been reduced by more than 25% at the IRS, and the Trump administration has rescinded more than $50 billion in their own investments in technology and updates at the IRS. You know, underfunding our auditing capabilities needs is short-sighted. You know, recent estimates suggest that $1 of funding, every $1 funding for the IRS would help retain as much as $12 in revenue from a compliance standpoint, all from just ensuring that our existing tax code is fairly enforced. And we have examples of that here locally. During the Biden administration, the IRS announced charges stemming from a tax scheme led by a prior Lake man uncovering $6.7 million in fraudulent tax returns, and the ringleader of that fraud was sentenced to 9 years in prison in 2024. You know, members, as a former tax committee, I know that certain topics can spark, let's say, you know, a healthy dialogue, things like corporate tax loopholes and those paying their fair share, to name a few. Those are important topics, but that's not really the primary focus of this bill. This bill is to ensure that we're preventing businesses or partnerships that are truly defrauding the state of Minnesota, and that they can be held accountable. You know, divesting from our audit capabilities is not good for business. It's good for dishonest business, and will come at a competitive cost to the majority of our businesses who, of course, are doing things the right way and following the rules and paying what they owe. So that's the thrust of 3913. I would invite testimony and a discussion by members.
Thank you very much, Chair Howard. We have one testifier signed up, Eric Harris Bernstein. Please introduce yourself. Is he here? Please introduce yourself for the record as you get started with your testimony.
Chair Gomez, Chair Davids, members of the committee, my name is Eric Bernstein, and I am the director of We Make Minnesota, which is a coalition of labor and community groups united in support of a sufficient and equitable state budget. Thank you for the opportunity to share our support for HF 3913, which would enable the Department of Revenue to implement a tax compliance program for the purpose of improving the state's ability to audit and collect taxes on corporations, wealthy individuals, and complex partnerships. This is a no-brainer from our perspective. We must ensure that our tax code is accurately implemented, and with all due regard for Chair Davids, that filers are paying their fair share in the literal sense. We know, as Chair Howard stated, that the number of large, complex partnerships is growing and that state and federal auditing expertise is not keeping up with aggressive avoidance and potential evasion techniques. Our investment in better monitoring and understanding these partnerships will return what we spend several times over in the form of increased collections, but it will also generate greater trust in a system that often feels rigged by the rich and powerful. That's good news for everyone, especially small businesses. A porous tax code, on the other hand, only rewards those who invest in high-paid accountants rather than innovating new, useful products or increasing output. That's the exact wrong sort of incentive to create, and we avoid it by ensuring fair enforcement. I would, however, like to share one note of caution with regard to Subdivision 2 of the bill, which allows DOR to engage in private contracts in the pursuit of better enforcement. We understand that that provision could allow for purchasing technologies or data, and that could complement, our own capacity, but we do feel that an important part of this investment would be to build in-house auditing capacity. That's essential for strong, democratically controlled tax enforcement and the rule of law. Too often we look at an essential but difficult job and decide the public sector is unable to do it, but that becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. So we hope that we'll use this money to invest in in-house auditing capacity so we can enforce the tax code. Otherwise, we rely on private entities to enforce our tax code, which carries some inherent conflicts of interest. In closing, I just want to offer a topical argument. Obviously, this session we've heard an enormous amount about fraud, and I'd like to make sure that everyone in this room understands the essential role that the IRS Criminal Investigations Division played in apprehending and prosecuting people responsible for Feeding Our Futures and for the Housing Stabilization Services fraud that we saw more recently. If you read about those cases, the IRS was all over them. The IRS actually rescinded Feeding Our Futures nonprofit status in February of 2020. And so investing in these sorts of capacities, if you care about fraud, this is really one important way that we do it. So we should have these kinds of abilities in-house in our state here in Minnesota. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Mr. Bernstein. Up next, Tanner. What's your last name, Tanner? Fritzinger. Tanner Fritzinger, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and get started. Sorry about that.
Hello, Chair Gomez, Chair Davids, and members of the committee. My name is Tanner Fritzinger, and I am a political affairs coordinator for the Minnesota Association of Professional Employees. We are a labor union which represents over 18,000 state workers across all agencies, boards, and commissions. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of House File 3913. MAIT members are responsible for overseeing and enacting a wide variety of essential functions of the state. From maintaining clean air and water to providing critical IT services, Minnesota works because of the services that MAIT members provide. The increased investments in House File 3913 will help our tax enforcement divisions, who are also MAPE represented workers, ensure all Minnesota filers pay what they owe. Providing the Department of Revenue the ability to accurately collect the revenues owed by the state's largest corporations and income filers is essential to reduce the federal funding gap and to address the state's structural imbalance. A fully funded budget is important in allowing MAIT members to deliver the services and programs that Minnesotans rely on in the face of budget uncertainties. However, as Eric had pointed out, we do have some minor concerns with the implementation language found in Subdivision 2 of the bill, which would allow the Commissioner of Revenue to potentially contract outside of state employees to obtain or create tax analytics. We strongly encourage building in-house capacity for complex audits, so we do not have to come to depend on private entities to ensure tax enforcement. We hope that the committee will instead commit to supporting the state workers at the Department of Revenue and remove any language allowing the potential outsourcing of the work. We appreciate the bill's intent and feel House File 3913 will be a good step forward in providing DOR the necessary tools to accurately do its job. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Is there anyone else present who wishes to testify on House File 3913? All right. Not seeing any, we will move to member discussion. First up, Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Howard, for bringing this bill. I generally am strongly in favor of technology upgrades and helping us fight fraud on a number of fronts. My concern is that there's a lot of work going on in this in the HHS space and state gov. And so as the OLA and I have spoken about this for many years, and I have a bill on, I've been carrying for 6 years, we don't want each department doing their own thing. We need it to work across the enterprise. So I would just encourage you to work with the chairs of DHS and the chairs of state gov, because we are actively all looking for a solution that can talk across agencies, and they can still tweak for their individual program needs, but it concerns me that we would put any money into something without the bigger system-wide technology upgrades in place. So please, I just encourage you to do that, or I'm happy to interface with you on that. And then secondly, one of the testifiers brought up this issue in Subdivision 2 about entering into contracts. And I would just like to understand your, and maybe you want the department to come and speak about what you think the scope of that is, because the language is incredibly broad. May enter into contracts the commissioner deems necessary. And we had this discussion in my committee on Monday about the use of private investigators to help discover and even recoup fraud. And I wondered if that would be something that would be allowed under this section.
Thank you, Representative Robbins. Representative Howard.
I'll just say first, I agree with the concept of that, you know, we should try to avoid siloed work. You know, I do think when we're looking at sort of the specific activity of examining tax returns, et cetera, there's a case to be made for specific investments to do that work, and I think probably looks a little different than some of the work in other agencies. But we shouldn't have to reinvent the wheel, and communication is a good thing. So I appreciate those comments. And to your point, we did start with this language in a broader sense to invite that kind of dialogue with the department and to make sure that we're creating flexibility in terms of tools. So I appreciate your perspective on it, and I think that can be brought to bear as those discussions develop with the department.
Thank you. Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Chair Gomez, and thank you, Representative Howard. I hope you will keep that in mind. And to the extent that what was talked about in the O'Malley report and recommended by the O'Malley report in that regard, I would like to at least, you know, be apprised of those conversations. And to your first point, however, I think it's really important to know that what the agencies on the fraud side are looking for is to be able to compare tax returns, so that when you're looking at a provider who's being investigated for fraud, you can easily look at the tax returns. And currently, that capability is not there, and it's been one of the areas where it's been a source of frustration. So I just encourage you to keep that in mind. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. I'm going to ask Ms. Bears to come up. I will just say that, as you likely know, there are different kind of approaches to personal identifying information with respect to people's tax returns that is core to the mission of the IRS and of the Department of Revenue. We know that at the federal level, the IRS has basically corrupted that tradition of ironclad protection of taxpayer data because it is, you know, which is a problem for all, the data sharing with the Department of Revenue has to be approached very carefully because, you know, we have a voluntary tax system. And so people need to believe that when they send their information to the Department of Revenue, it's not like sending a piece of mail to a regular person. And so I appreciate that. But we should have further discussions about that because, you know, I can see the importance of that data to ensuring investigations and also just feel called to protect you know, the Department of Revenue's treatment of people's sensitive taxpayer data. But thank you, Chair Robbins. Yeah, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I agree with that. And I think we actually in our state have very robust protections under Chapter 13. But I think there are times when, especially law enforcement authority, who's doing an active fraud investigation that's, you know, checked all the boxes of important data, that we just want to make sure that that's something they can actually take a look at. So it's more the broader issue of systems needing to talk to each other in general across the entire state enterprise. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And certainly I think that that has been the tradition in our country, is that there is basic respect for the rule of law with respect to accessing people's personal identifying information. But unfortunately, if just take a look at what's happened in the last year in our country, is that we have, you know, unelected billionaires going into private data sets, Social Security Administration data, IRS data, you know, that previously has been basically sacrosanct. And we have allowed private entities and private individuals to ransack it for their own commercial benefit. And so, you know, when you see a government that's being used like that, and that's the way that our federal government is being used, for literally the personal enrichment of, you know, the billionaires who are lined up behind our president at the inauguration, you know, we're operating in a different environment these days with respect to how the federal government treats people's individual data. But more conversation to be had here, obviously. Representative Lee.
Thank you, Chair. Since you already covered that portion about how tax filer data has to be private, I actually want to get to my larger point that I wanted to make. I wanted to thank Representative Howard for bringing this bill forward. If people will recall, last year, DOGE estimated the IRS staff and a third of IRS auditors were fired at the federal level. This is important because we all file state and federal taxes. And so the fact that the capacity of the federal government to audit, you know, these really complex corporate structures that are intentionally set up to evade paying taxes means that there is an impact on our state revenues and our state auditors. Because what typically happens is when federal auditors are working on a case and they find information, there is a relationship where they share data with our state Department of Revenue. And so when, you know, the federal you know, auditors are not working, this puts more strain on our state staff, our state auditors. And as we all know, we're in a, you know, constrained state budget situation. And so, you know, I know folks, you know, hate adding fat and adding more staff and more FTEs. And so this proposal before us to use technology tools to try to fill in that gap is extremely helpful. You'll note there's a fiscal note here, but, you know, as we talked about yesterday, you know, oftentimes there isn't a secondary impact. So when we think about the money that we could bring back into the state general fund when we go after people who try to evade paying taxes, that's not reflected in this fiscal note. I know Chair Howard talked a little bit about this earlier, but when we think about, right, like the potential loss because we don't have federal auditors anymore and the fact that now, right, there's increased workload on state auditors, this tool will help us kind of recoup some of that money that, you know, taxpayers in Minnesota are losing because they're paying their fair share. Sorry, Chair Davids. But, you know, these folks who intentionally build these really complex structures are not. And so thank you, Chair Howard.
Thank you, Representative Lee. I called Ms. Bears up here, and then I didn't ask you about the very simple question that we had about Subdivision 2. My apologies. Yeah, so just if you could tell us, I think it was Representative Robbins's question, just about, like, what does that mean when you talk about, you know, what the contracts that the commissioner deems necessary to obtain or create tax analytics, et cetera.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, for the record, my name is Joanna Bears. I'm the legislative director at the Department of Revenue. And first I want to say, Chair Gomez, you said it right. The number one priority at the department is making sure people's data is secure. We hold a lot of personal data, and we are very cautious when it comes to entering into any type of sharing agreement or sharing our data with anyone. And I know we probably have had conversations with many of you authors when you have a bill that has a data sharing component in it, we usually come and talk to you about likely our concerns with sharing that information. We do rely on a voluntary system, and so we are very careful to make sure that people rely that we will keep their information safe. So when we look at implementation and making contracts, it's a lot of it's software. So there's a lot of software companies out there that will have these analytical tools that we will then take and build with into our system itself. We contract with FAST, which holds our tax system tool, and so they can sometimes build analytical tools within our system as well, but that's still a contract with the third party. Most of the in-house stuff is doing is testing, things like that.
Thank you, Ms. Bears. Chair Robbins, did you have any follow-up for Ms. Bears as long as she's up there?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Ms. Bears, and I appreciate that. I think it is likely mostly that, but because the language is broad, it wouldn't preclude what Judge O'Malley recommended in his report, I don't think, which is contracting with a group like Waypoint to do the investigation, and I just wondered if you would speak to the department's position on that.
Ms. Bears?
Madam Chair, Representative Robbins, we don't have a position on that. I think we take tax fraud very seriously. We have our own criminal division at the department that also looks into it. We have an internal audit division that looks into things. We work really well with the OLA. We don't have an official position on it, but we always welcome those conversations.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, Robbins. I would just like to say that I appreciate the department's great work. You guys are an example of stellar work on fraud detection and prevention, and I really appreciate everything the department does. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Robbins. And please tell Commissioner Marquardt that Chair Robbins said that. Thank you.
Thank you,
Ms. Bears. We appreciate it. We appreciate all your work. Next up is Representative Witte.
Thank you, Chair Gomez. Thank you, Chair Howard, for bringing this forward. I agree with you on the silo piece and not talking. I think that's kind of has gotten us in a little bit of trouble in the state. And so I do think the more we communicate, and I think the other question coming out of it, I think the testifier talked about third-party involvement. If we have a problem with government agencies talking to each other and information getting out, that's a problem right there that should be dealt with. But getting after the fraud is good because I think Minnesotans have a crisis of confidence in our state government right now. So any way we can update some of these systems, make them work a little better, I think is going to help us. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Witte. All right. And is there anybody who wants to bring up anything else before we move to Chair Davids for closing comments? Not seeing any? Chair Davids.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair. And if Ms. Bears could please come back to the table. I've got a couple questions. I just want to feel like they're want them to feel like they're participating.
That is important.
In the committee.
So. Welcome back, Ms. Bears. Chair Davids.
And thank you so much, Madam Chair. And to Ms. Bears, as I was looking through this, don't you already do this?
Ms. Bears.
Madam Chair, Representative Davids, we do have auditors that would be going through and looking to make sure people are complying with their tax obligations, yes.
And thank you so much,
Representative Davids.
Madam Chair and Ms. Bears. You know personally that there is no one in this legislature that wants people to pay their fair share more than I do. That being said, is this a DOR budget request?
Chair Davids, this is not a DOR budget request. The governor's budget has not come out.
Ms. Bears, Chair Howard to request this?
Ms. Bears.
Chair Gomez, Representative Davids, no, but we did have a similar request last year in our budget that requested more audit folks into our pass-through units to help with some of the complex returns that we're receiving.
Chair Davids.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And Ms. Bears, you shouldn't probably need that now for the pass-through.
Chair Davids, is that a question?
Yeah. Do you need that now for the pass-through?
Ms. Bears.
Chair Gomez, Representative, we're always looking for folks that could help in those areas. And it's when I say pass-throughs, I mean like partnerships and S-corps, things that flow into individual They've become more complex as the years have gone on, and so I think we're always, they take longer.
Chair Davids.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair, and to Ms. Bear. So basically the question is, we haven't seen your budget yet, so we don't really know, but you haven't gone to Chair Howard to ask for this money. That's right here.
Chair Davids, yeah, I'm just.
Did I stutter?
No.
I just stutter sometimes. What's, yeah?
What are you getting at? This is not the governor's budget. Chair Howard brought this bill forward.
Well, and thank you very much for that. Chair Howard's asking for this money. I think it's kind of odd if the department hasn't requested it. I mean, do we as members just go into the department and say, hey, we're going to give you $10 million or $5 million?
The governor's budget is, I believe, coming out next week. Chair Howard.
Chair Davids, I can help answer that question in the sense that, you know, we at the legislature have our prerogative. I know that you probably don't take all of your marching orders just from the state the departments or the Trump administration. You know, so this is a proposal that comes forward due to legislative work and in partnership with previous requests for the Department of Revenue. But this is a proposal that I'm bringing forward.
Oh, okay.
Chair Davids.
Yeah, and thank you very much, Madam Chair. And Chair Howard, I appreciate that.
Anything further? All right, seeing no further discussion, Chair Howard.
I appreciate the discussion, and I feel like in terms of the intent, I hear some bipartisan support for it and good discussion. And so, again, welcome the time and hope that's something we can move forward this year.
Thank you. With that, Chair Howard renews his motion that House File 3913 be laid over for possible inclusion in the 2026 tax bill, and the bill is laid over. All right. Finally, on our agenda today, apologies for leaving Chair Baker waiting so long. I think I leaned over a minute ago and asked Patrick if you were here, and he was like, yeah, he's been here for quite some time, so my apologies. So I'm going to move House File 3752 be laid over for possible inclusion in the 2026 tax bill. Welcome to the committee, Chair Baker. Please describe your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I really appreciate this hearing today. This is, I think, the one thing that I might want to ask the chair is that in a future discussion is that we try to use this as a little bit more of an urgency matter, because I'm coming to you with a real need to give some relief to our hospitality industry through just recent disruptions in business over the last several months. It's a very challenging time, and I want to bring to you a request to allow the Department of Revenue, Commissioner Marquardt, to allow the liquor postings to be not triggered like they normally are right now by state law. The commissioner has been very good about working with businesses in this area around the state. When you can't pay your sales tax, he has been very good about understanding where it is happening, where they need some relief. So he has the ability currently to not do the penalties or the interest on those currently. What he doesn't have the ability to, though, is to unhook the requirement if you get late with a sales tax payment for your business. He does not have the ability to say you can't now buy liquor for your business. So if it's a hotel, live entertainment venue, restaurant, he doesn't have the choice or the ability to do that. What I'm asking in this bill today, Madam Chair, is to urgently kind of move this so that we give the commissioner the ability to sort of waive that, so that if our restaurants and others are more than 10 days late on their sales tax payment because they're trying to make a rent payment, a payroll payment, something else they're trying to do, that he has the ability to not hold up that important part of the business is to purchase liquor. So that is part of the role that we have to have. It's the overall really gist of this. We did this back during COVID. This is a bill that is temporary in nature. It ends in sunsets at the end of December of 2026. There's no cost to the state. We're not waiving taxes. We are looking, though, for a quick movement to try to give this to them as soon as we can, so the commissioner can make this a change in this ability to make this change. I have a testifier, Madam Chair, and I'll do that, and maybe then I'll just take some questions. So that's kind of a brief, I'm trying to keep it as brief as I can, of House File 3752.
Thank you very much, Chair Baker. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself as you get started.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Member of the committee, thank you for having me here. My name is Daniel Del Prado. My restaurant group owns 13 restaurants in the Twin Cities, including Porzana, Colita, Martina, Rosalia. We employ more than more or less 900 people. In 2025, we contribute close to $5 million in sales taxes. Restaurants are pillars of this city and their communities. Right now, many are in danger. Minnesota restaurants were fragile before this crisis. Since 2019, with COVID, we have a lot of losses in sales, debt, inflation, rising in costs of food, rent, insurance, utilities, everything. Restaurants' margins are like about 5% in good years. Then in December of 2025, Operation Metro Surge started. Across my whole group, we saw sales drop around 25%. Some groups saw steeper losses, like 50%, and some than their immigrant base customers, they are down to 90%. Minnesota winters are hard for restaurants without patios and people not going out that much. In the base case scenario in the winter, you break even. With all this drop in sales, it's not survivable. You cannot pay rent, payrolls, and vendors. Even now, the sales are not back up. With concerts not back to where they have to be, then we depend on our sales is still not up. It's looking better, but not there yet. In my own case, I opened a new restaurant the same week that this search started. I was denied a traditional loan to make payroll. I have to have multiple high-interest, borderline predatory loans to make payroll. I asked vendors to give me 3 to 4 weeks of extra time to pay them because cash flow collapsed. That was 6 weeks ago. We're not asking for anything free. We're asking for practical tools to buy us some time. This would be if the state can defer the payment of these sales taxes, but they must cooperate with the Minnesota Alcohol and Gambling Enforcement to make sure that we don't get posted. If we get posted, we cannot buy alcohol. Restaurants depend on the sales of alcohol. During COVID, at least we knew help was coming. This time, we didn't see anything yet. If you can act with urgency, if conditions continue without targeted support, we will lose many restaurants. Then they were not able to get loans like I did. I have a big group. Some people are not able to get any help right now. So. Thank you for hearing the bill, and if you have any questions, I'm available. So,
thank you for your testimony, Mr. Del Prado, for being with us, and you know, for your work. And I know that so many of your employees were really negatively impacted also over the last 6 weeks, and so we know that restaurants across certainly our city. I know Representative Hollins is going to talk a little bit. She's from St. Paul. That you all played an important role in. And in protecting our community during those days, so I appreciate it. Representative Hollins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And yes, thank you, Representative Baker, and to your testifier for coming forward. I think this is a really important conversation, and it occurs to me that GOP leadership said that rental assistance shouldn't happen because people chose to stay home while this federal insurrection was happening. And I think it's important for us to note that when people stay home, it impacts all businesses, right? It impacts the employees, the employers, and frankly, just the customer base. You know, living on the east side of St. Paul was incredibly difficult for a lot of the businesses there that were minority owned. And even if
all of the workers and all of the owners were documented, it meant that their customer base did not come in. And then for companies that, you know, that have staff that just felt afraid, even if they are documented, because people of color were being ripped out of their cars, were being stopped in the street, were being detained for multiple days, even when they were U.S. citizens. And that reality was a lot for people to bear. And they made decisions to not come to work. And those decisions were not made lightly because it impacted their income, it impacts employers' income, and it impacts, frankly, the service that folks who are going to those places come to expect. But I think it's really dangerous when we start saying businesses are impacted. Businesses aren't just, they're not just things that exist in the world. They're made of people. They're made of people. They're made of cooks and servers and wait staff and all sorts of things. And it's, so I support this bill, but I also think it should go along with some compassion for the people who had to make those really difficult decisions and people who stayed home because they were afraid that they would be taken away and there'd be nobody to watch their kids, or they'd be taken away and their parents wouldn't have the help that they needed in the off time, right? Like, these were really difficult decisions that people made. And again, I support this bill, but I think I am disturbed by the lack of empathy that has been shown to the people who had to make those difficult decisions and the fact that they are about to lose their homes. And I will tell you what, even if we, you know, make a temporary stay for paying taxes, if you don't have employees because they can't have a, because they don't have a home, a place to call home, it's not going to help you, right? It's not going to help our businesses. And so as we think about this, we have to think about it holistically. We have to think about the people who contribute to the businesses, the people who are patrons and who are working in those businesses, when we think about what happened over the past 2 months to our communities. And so my heart goes out to you, sir, because this was a difficult time. And I know the businesses in my area had their doors locked most of the time because they were afraid. And that's not the Minnesota that I want to live in, and I'm sure it's not the Minnesota that you want to live in. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hollins. Chair Joaquin.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I just want to thank you, Mr. Del Prado, for being here today, too. I know the restaurant business is not easy, and I'm glad that you mentioned that you were one of the lucky ones to be able to take out a loan. We have a higher-end restaurant, a really small one in Hopkins, that's up and coming, and a phenomenal food, great ownership. All the staff is documented. Few of the staff were staff of color. That owner was driving people to and from work, covering their rent, trying the best they could, but they lost $30,000 in 1 month and they're just one restaurant, and it's been really hard. So I appreciate this bill, but I have to echo Representative Holland's statement that we have to look at this holistically too, and just appreciate you being here. Thank you. And that it's not just Minneapolis, St. Paul. It's Hopkins, St. Louis Park, Edina, Minnetonka, all the different areas around the suburbs.
Thank you, Chair Joaquin. Chair Howard.
Thank you, Chair Gomez. And thank you for bringing the bill forward and for testimony. My question is for Representative Baker. You know, I support finding ways for this legislature to step up and support our small businesses. I'm curious, as a strategy, you know, thinking about more globally how we support our small businesses and how critical customers are in those businesses, is some form of emergency rental assistance something you would support as we find ways to support our communities, including our businesses?
Madam Chair.
Chair Baker.
And Representative Howard, thank you for that question. Yes, I think that there's a lot of other conversations going on around other support. Again, I want to mention to folks here, my businesses were affected by this as well in Wilmer. My restaurants were very much hurt. The fear that Representative Hollins mentioned is real. I embrace that. I lived it out in Wilmer, so I know this is the real deal. I think, and I'm having conversations with your colleagues, Representative Pinto and Zhang. We are talking about other conversations. So this is an urgent matter. That taxes are due next week from sales that happened in February, for every restaurant, hotel that collected sales tax, it's due next week. Now, we're not going to get this passed next week, but I'm hoping with the work of the chairs and the committee that you might make an exception to this bill today, because the quicker we get this out, the better it will help them. So if they don't have the ability to buy any liquor the first part of March, and we wait around till May, this isn't going to help anybody, because the commissioner is, their hands are tied. I need your help today with this, but there's more conversations going on. So I want to make sure that the committee knows and my colleagues know, this is the first of, I think, many conversations about how do we get them either temporary relief with maybe some support, but long-term policy relief we can give them. There's a bunch of things we can work on together, but this is going to be a real moment for us to come together bipartisanly to help this, because it happened statewide, but I also recognize that this really happened. I'm not happy how it happened, a lot of things, but there's a lot of reasons we got there. So it's going to be a lot more than what we have time today to talk about, but I am committed to having those conversations with my colleagues like we are doing. So this moment today is something that we need, because of the quickness of this will help a lot more people. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Baker. Chair Howard.
I really appreciate those comments, and I really agree with the urgency. The challenge is, we needed your help yesterday in our housing committee where we weren't able to move forward on emergency rental assistance. And I do think that urgency is the name of the game when it comes to the response that has happened all across the state. And I just really genuinely appreciate your comments and look forward to working together for how we, in a holistic way, move with the urgency that our state deserves. Thanks.
Thank you. Is there any further conversation on House File 3752? Representative Lee.
Thank you, Chair. This question is for the author. I wanted to just ask whether, adding lines 1.19 and 1.12 would narrow or is the intent to narrow or broaden the folks who or the entities that would qualify for this, abatement in another way for the liquor posting.
Chair Baker, I could give you a shot at it, but we could also go to our council since it's.
If we could do that, Madam Chair, I don't want to misspeak that. If we could do it in partisan, that'd be great.
Sounds good. Is that okay, Mr. Klayman? All right, Mr. Klayman.
Madam Chair and Representative Lee, so that language is language that's parallel to language that was in a similar provision enacted during the pandemic. As far as the answer to your substantive question, I think there would be significant overlap between the liquor retailers, between the liquor retailers and places of public accommodation, meaning that most liquor retailers would be places of public accommodation because liquor licenses are provided to certain establishments, and the vast majority of those establishments are businesses. They're businesses open to the public, so restaurants, hotels, bowling alleys, liquor stores, and so on. There could be some edge cases, which I would have to look into a little bit more for, say, licenses that are allowed to clubs. If they're not open to the public, and there may be some special laws as well that provide certain authority to certain establishments that we need to look at, too. But I think generally speaking, I think most liquor retailers would meet that definition.
Representative Lee?
Good. Thank you.
All right. Is there any further discussion on House File 3752? All right, not seeing any. Chair Baker, any closing comments?
Yeah, just a final comment again. Thank you for your time, members. Again, urgency in this matter. This bill that I'm carrying is important today. Those taxes are due next week. The business has to be in that accommodation listing that we had mentioned. They have to be late on taxes, and they actually have to ask the commissioner for an abatement for this time. So it isn't like freely, there has to be a little bit of a recommendation by the business to do this. So I think this could be a good move for us to start the process. Again, back to sort of Chair Howard's comments, there's a lot more going on behind us. This one is one, like a lot of them are about speed, but a lot of them are more complicated than maybe this one. We've done this before. We can maybe kind of learn from that, but I'm hoping that the committee might consider this one a little bit different so we can get this going, so we can actually show there's some movement in this area that we can actually work together, and there will be more to come, Madam Chair. So thank you. With that, I do appreciate your support for House File 3752 to move as quickly as we can to the General Register, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much for being with us today, Chair Baker. With that, I will renew my motion that House File 3752 be laid over for possible inclusion in the 2026 tax bill, and the bill is laid over. Thank you for being with us. Chair Davids has the gavel for our next meeting, Tuesday, March 17th. Chair Davids.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. On our list, we've got three bills on our list so far. There could be some more added. We're working on things, and they will be posted properly. House File 238, a Johnson bill. House File 3381, a Johnson bill. House File 3754, a Joy bill. Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There being no further business in front of the committee, we are adjourned.